Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Bruce, I don't think that Sheamus versus Gunther 2 lived up to the hype or, you know, the 5-star level of their match that they had at Clash at the Castle. But admittedly, it would be hard to top what they did on that show. But I did think it was a good match. And more importantly than that, I thought WWE did a really nice job throughout the show hyping the match up and making it feel like a really, really big deal as the main event of the show. So if you had, you know, huge expectations for them to repeat their performance from Clash at the Castle, I don't think they did that. But I think it's just a good sign for the WWE product overall that these big matches that are getting, you know, built up on TV for TV payoffs are being treated that way once we get to the night of the show. So that was a big positive for me, even if the match didn't live up to the hype. What'd you think?
You know, it's hard to live up to a PLE match when you have two commercial breaks during yours, which a nearly 20-minute match, but or just over 20 minutes, I should say. That's beside the point, though, because the I don't think you could be disappointed with this match. There, like you said about the build-up, a couple times throughout the night, I noted that not only did they keep saying how Sheamus has never won the Intercontinental Championship, it's the one championship that's eluded him during his Hall of Fame career. They kept putting that over, so you know that he wasn't going to win tonight. But earlier in the night, it wasn't just this title, but when they're talking about the tag team championships of the Usos, they discussed the historical significance of them being at 746 days, and that's the only two teams in front of them now in terms of the longest reigns are Demolition and the New Day. So, adding that historical significance is always a plus because you're just telling the viewers, again, why the titles are important. And then here with the Intercontinental Championship match, it wasn't just that they told you it was important, but that video they played before the entrances, that is what every championship main event match should have, whether it's on TV or PLE. AEW can learn a couple things from WWE in that you can take some time out to put a video. They're doing better, but they can still take more time to have a video that details exactly why such a match is important and what the stakes are for each person involved. And I think tonight, a home run for WWE when it comes to this match and the overall, I guess, execution. Though I did note that the crowd started sounding like a lot like the crowd during the Acclaim versus Swerve in Our Glory match at All Out. And I was wondering if they might pull the trigger, but I had a feeling that with the heavy-handedness of Cole's commentary that Gunther would retain.
Yeah, and look, I think ultimately, and I made this point on the preview show earlier today on the PW Torch YouTube channel. Everybody subscribe to that channel if you haven't done so already. We've got exclusive content up there every single day. But I made the point of, like, it would be a nice moment for Sheamus to win the Intercontinental title. And I think he's an act and a character and a star on the show that's certainly worthy of that spot. But do you really want to beat Gunther with Sheamus at this point? Like, I just think Gunther is on such a run here and kind of an unexpectedly positive run. And I just wouldn't halt it. And it is not, it's really nothing against Sheamus, but it's more just praise for Gunther in that, you know, I keep him hot. I mean, he still has a long way to go and there's a lot of opponents that he can face. And it's just not the time for Sheamus to win that match, even if the crowd really wanted it. So I'm glad that Paul Levesque didn't, you know, succumb to like the shininess of a big pop on the season premiere night of SmackDown, sending everybody home happy. Like, you know, to me, there is bigger business in Gunther right now. So I think they made the right call there. And Sheamus is relatively protected in that with that finish, and it built the Donnybrook fight brawl or whatever you want to call it tomorrow night at Extreme Rules up at the same time. So I was okay, more than okay with the finish. I actually thought it made a lot of sense to not go Sheamus here.
Oh yeah, no. I just wondered if they would pull the trigger because mid-match because of the crowd reaction. But yeah, it doesn't make sense to pull the title off Gunther. This could be one of those situations where you give him a year plus long reign to reestablish that title that's gone through so many ups and downs, mostly downs, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years. But speaking of Paul Levesque, was tonight the first time he's appeared on WWE programming since he was named the head of everything? I can't remember.
It is. It was. Stephanie,
and that's all he came out for, huh?
That's it. Just two lines. I thought when he was out there and kind of like, you know, saying his shtick or whatever, welcome to Fox, blah, blah, blah. And then Roman's music hit. Like, I thought we might get some kind of angle between the two of them, which I thought would be pretty interesting to see. But obviously they didn't go that route. Triple H was pretty much just hightailed it out of there as soon as Reigns' music hit.
Yeah.
Bruce, did the finish, like, we've been talking a lot, you know, really in the last, I don't know, 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, about the finishes to these big matches that Paul Levesque has been putting on. And a lot of them have ended in some sort of shenanigans or a DQ or distraction. And tonight you got some of that, but I'll throw to you first. What was it okay, given the circumstances of what they were trying to do tonight? Or do you file this under the kind of in the folder of that, just another kind of cop-out finish to a big match?
It's too many. And when the two matches to start the show, there's only four matches tonight, by the way, so they packed a lot into a show with only four matches, but the first two matches had the lowest amount of stakes and they had the cleanest finishes. And so that just is kind of odd booking to me. But I think that with the Donnybrook match tomorrow night, you had the avenue to just have a clean finish with no distractions here. And especially because of how the Donnybrook match is laid out, you could have given Gunther the clean finish here and then tomorrow night have Vinci or Kaiser be the one to take the loss. And I think that would have worked fine. One thing I'm interested to hear is if there is an on-site correspondent, how the match was during the commercial breaks, if it was, you know, just if the fans are into it the whole time and whatnot, and how they, you know, it sounded like they really rejected the finish, but I think they understood. I think they understood why it happened in the context of everything. So I'm hoping we can get someone on from the arena.
Yeah, we'll see if we can. And I'm with you. Like, it is too much, and I think the reason it's too much is kind of, like, highlighted by tonight, because I think this the non-finish finish tonight made a ton of sense for this match and for what they have going on tomorrow night. Like, I think it played here. Like, it's doing those kind of finishes isn't a horrible thing by any means. It's just the volume at which they seem to happen. And I think if you don't have them happen as often, something like tonight makes sense, and I think people kind of nod their head, and I think there's some heat in that, but it just fades to the background of everything else. So, like, tonight, it's like, this is a reason to me not to do them as often, because when you really need to, and when it really makes sense, and when it really can further a story, it doesn't resonate the same. That was my takeaway with it.
No, yeah, I just thought how many they've been having lately, and that they at least had an out if they wanted to, and they didn't take it. I also noted that I think it was I forgot who said it, but someone definitely said sports entertainer very emphatically tonight. So there's still some of that stuff going on in WWE, even with Paul Levesque.
Yeah, well, did you? But yeah, there certainly was. And Michael Cole also referenced PWG and Progress tonight. Mm-hmm. It's like two different worlds of WWE speak are colliding colliding head on. All right, Bruce. Well, we have a ton of talk about. We got some callers that are in the queue. There's a ton of wrestling going on tonight right now. If you're watching Impact, Bound for Glory on pay-per-view, there's Live AEW Rampage and Battle of the Belts that's on MLB Playoffs. So thank you all for being with us tonight live and joining us on the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the October 7th edition of WWE Friday Night SmackDown. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor Zach Haydorn, covering for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things, running down the show on the Wade Keller Hotline. Please give us a shot. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP, and you can get this show with the ads and plugs removed, an ad-free version of the website, all the back issues of the PW Torch weekly newsletter, and a ton, and I mean a ton, of VIP exclusive podcasts. We would appreciate your business, and I think you get a ton, so love for you to try us out. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP. My co-host this week and the other voice you hear, Bruce Hazelwood from PWT Talks NXT and part of the team that covers NXT on a regular basis. Bruce, always a blast, my friend, to talk wrestling with you. Glad to have you back on the show. It's been a bit.
Thank you, Zach. I also filled in for Wade tonight on the reporting side, so the SmackDown report on the Torch and the VIP side tonight is actually my report, which will sound, look, and feel a lot like my NXT reports every other Tuesday night, or depending on how the rotation goes.
It's a good report. I've been. Go ahead.
No. I just got lost for words, but thank you.
No problem. Yeah, check that report on pwtorch.com. I had it up during the show as a second screen experience with some really good analysis, and so check that out. And Bruce, talk about PWT Talks NXT a bit, because you're a regular on that show, and man, the last year quite the pivots left and right down in NXT, huh?
Yeah, you know, 1 year after they changed to 2.0, they go back to black and gold 2.0. I guess it's kind of black, gold, and white now. So I joined the NXT crew at the beginning of 2022 after I had covered Raw for the Torch for a little over a year. And, you know, there have been a lot of good things, a lot of bad things, a lot of things that you would expect from a developmental show, and we're still seeing that. Though this past Tuesday was really the first show since they announced the change where you see the aesthetic and the graphics and everything kind of mesh now with the change in logo, whereas the past 2 weeks, I think because those two had been taped, if I remember correctly, it was a lot of just throwing the new logo on the splatter from the old logo. So now it's more cohesive, there are rumored to be some title redesigns coming as well because of the iridescent belt that went along with the splatter design no longer fits. We go live every Tuesday, about 20 minutes after NXT goes off the air. There's always an overrun, sometimes 2 minutes, usually all 7 minutes. So about the bottom of the hour, we go live on the other line, the Live for Wrestling Night in America, the Daily Cast line, I believe it is. And you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, for any questions. And usually it's Nate Lindberg and Kelly Wells and myself, but, you know, life happens. So recently it's been a lot of two-man booths, but that means it's been a shorter show. So good for your ears.
Fantastic. Check out that show every single week on Tuesday nights. We'll go ahead and we'll open up the phone lines right now. It's 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Please press 1 if you want to talk to us and either ask questions or make comments on tonight's episode of SmackDown. The email bin is open as well. It's waykellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's waykellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be checking that throughout the night as well if you don't want to talk to us, but have something that you'd like to get off your chest. So, Bruce, with that said, we will move right along here to our first caller of the day. We will start things off with 615. 615, you are up first. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Zach, I get to talk to you twice in one day, man. Sean, VFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Zach, it's been – I was just saying, too, on the YouTube channel, I commented on the very end. I said, man, I hope to talk to you on a post show really soon. And then I was like, holy crap, I forgot he's on the post show tonight. That's pretty cool. Good to talk to you as always, Bruce. Good to talk to you again, man. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I thought that was you there. And, yeah, I mean, it was a good time on the PW Torch YouTube channel too. If you haven't subscribed, once again, please give us a shot. But Sean, what did you think of SmackDown tonight?
It was honestly overall, I didn't love it, to be totally honest. I thought the Sheamus, like you said, the match at the end was really, really good. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Bruce as far as I still didn't love the finish. I know why they did it, like you said, Zach. I respect that. It was such a really good match for, you know, just the two of them, and I kind of wish it would have been that way and just have Gunther get the win. But I get where they're going with the match, you know, tomorrow. I mean, it's fine. I just kind of would have rather had that. But the rest of the stuff, I honestly didn't really love. But I wanted to go back to just the Bloodline stuff with them because that was still a big part of the show at the beginning. I with the stuff with Roman and Logan, I didn't like any of that stuff, really, honestly. I mean, Heyman's, he's really trying to get a buzz from it, but it just fell flat. Like, Roman couldn't say anything because there's not a lot to say, and Logan just was, they were saying, you know, which a lot of people think, Logan sucks, and they just don't really care for him, and that kind of just goes into the hard part about this match. What did you guys think of all the stuff they did with Logan tonight and Roman? I thought it fell flat. And then with the Bloodline, I liked the stuff with them. What did you think about all that going into the whole show?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, fell flat is a certainty in my eyes, in a good way to describe it. But, I mean, it hovered on bad, and it also hovered on just, like, not hovered on, but it was ineffective. Like, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, you have Roman Reigns on this show. He's the biggest star that you have in the company, and he's the most overstar you have in the company. And you have him on this show. You're using one of his, you know, contracted dates. He's not on SmackDown and Raw regularly. And here you have him out there, and really the feeling that I got was that, yeah, Roman can't say much because if he does, he's going to come across as so much more likable, way cooler,
yep,
and somebody that the fans are going to universally cheer over Logan Paul. I mean, they were cheering Paul Heyman over Logan Paul. Like, so it's like they felt the need to protect Logan Paul by kind of having Roman Reigns just kind of stand out there. And on one hand, it's like, okay, you're self-aware enough to make that decision. And I suppose if you really need to protect this match for however many more weeks, whatever it is, 4 more weeks, it's like, okay, I guess you got to do what you got to do, but it's not a good sign for the future of this program. I mean, look, Roman Reigns is your top heel. There's major value in him getting beat by either an up-and-coming babyface or a made babyface, but there's business in that. And I don't think you want to muddy that up with kind of him getting cheered, even if it is Logan Paul and even if it is only a four-week thing. It's nothing that I think is going to derail Roman's momentum, but it's just like an unnecessary issue to have. So Bruce, I didn't like this segment either. I thought it was kind of a waste of Reigns' time, and really didn't further the story much either. Like, Logan Paul was kind of out there and that's kind of it. So yeah, I did not think this was particularly effective, and it's kind of crazy that they've got 4 more weeks that they have to manage to build this thing before Crown Jewel. But Bruce, what'd you think?
I mean, to further the story, just not necessarily this one. So you said it was ineffective. And it's not just that he got the what treatment too, but the most interesting aspect of this entire opening segment was the dynamic between Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and Roman Reigns. That was the most interesting aspect. It wasn't the dynamic between Roman Reigns and Logan Paul. Logan Paul looks like a deer in headlights. He looks like he lacks any sort of charisma that has brought him all those fans on YouTube tonight. It looked like he was intimidated legitimately by the presence of the five members of the Bloodline plus Paul Heyman. So that was definitely ineffective. The only thing that he was really there for was to drop the bit about Jey Uso to get the seeds turning on, maybe him being the one that either turns on Reigns or is the one that gets turned on by Sami Zayn and eventually Bloodline. Now, Before we started, Zach, I told you I had a Rumble. I had two Rumble scenarios, and one of them actually involves Jey Uso. The thing with Jey Uso, though, is since their first match, Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, I've been saying that in the overall, in the long run, the best story is that the person who should take the title off Roman Reigns with the best overall story is Jey Uso. But I'm not sure if this is the path I want to take to get there. Now, the Royal Rumble scenario would be a lot easier if Sami Zayn's presence wasn't there, but he just caught on so quickly and so endearingly with the crowd that, I mean, even tonight, you saw Roman Reigns break character and smile a bit at what Sami Zayn was saying about Logan Paul. He just has that effect. On Monday night, in the backstage segment when he and Jimmy were talking about the fire and the bed or the dog or whatever it was, and Solo was trying to be all stoic and mean, you saw him smile and laugh a little bit too, just because Sami Zayn has that effect on people, even those he's working with. So I know they're enjoying what they're doing. Jay is doing a really good job of coming off as what they said in the backstage segment later, the hothead, the person that they've always had an issue with their whole life. So it isn't just that this is something that they're tying just into the issues with Sami Zayn, but they're bringing it back to real life, to their upbringing together as cousins and as brothers with Jimmy and Solo.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I don't know if the path that I want them to take to get to Jimmy versus Reigns is this. I think what's happening here is they're suddenly setting the seeds for Sami Zayn to be the one to pull a mastermind, kind of like Damian Kemp in NXT with the Creed brothers, but only a little better, into where he might actually get the bloodline to turn on Jay, and then kind of is the shadow authority behind Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, because his advice becomes more valued than the other people in the group, even though they're family. So I think that's a direction that they might be heading with this that makes more sense to me than just Jey Uso being the one to getting turned off for whatever other reason. I think Sammy's the conduit for all of it.
That's good stuff. You're right about the dynamic between those guys. Like, that is a high point of the show, and it was later in the show as well during the tag team match, and that backstage segment where, you know, Roman Reigns is kind of pivoting from Jay as his, like, you know, top right hand man, and kind of like saying, hey, Sammy, you gotta deal with this, and so. I continue to like that story, and we'll see where it goes. And I think the really interesting thing about it is it can go a multitude of different directions. And that's why I kind of said that, like, look, like, this thing with Logan Paul is not going to make this storyline with Roman Reigns or Reigns as a champion, like, hit the skid. It's just not. Logan Paul is not important enough. And frankly, Crown Jewel is an event that kind of lives outside the bounds of, normal WWE storytelling anyway. But it's just like, you know, why? Like, why do it if you don't have to? But, I don't know. I can go on forever in terms of why this match is a bad idea. Tonight,
no one expects it to win either. That's the biggest issue.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And no one expects them to win. So it's crazy that they've got four more weeks of this to try to build. My guess is they don't, maybe one more kind of week of build, and then I just do the match and move on. Go ahead, Bruce. You were going to say something?
No, just you have such a big event that you're getting paid so much money for, regardless of who it is, and you come out with a match that there is little doubt as to the outcome. That's not how I would book something that's supposed to be so important, especially for your top act in the company, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head too, Bruce, that, like, Logan Paul, I think he looked okay out there with The Miz and in that environment. But, yeah, him being overwhelmed was very noticeable, standing there opposite Roman Reigns and the Bloodline and Paul Heyman. And kind of like, yeah, he was kind of smirking and laughing off the kind of the insults that were hurled his way by Paul Heyman, but it looked like an uncomfortable little smirk too. And so that is something to watch as he has more time in front of Reigns. Sean, we said a lot there, but either, you know, take any of that and comment, or maybe bring up another question altogether.
Yeah, though. I was going to bring up too, when they were talking about, they brought up somehow that Logan Paul is now dating Nina Agdal, a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. And I'm thinking, how in the world did you pull that off, Logan? Like, man, that's lucky you, I guess. But I don't know how you pulled that one off. Like, wow, okay. I just thought that was hilarious. But like you said, this story can go multiple ways with the bloodline, which I do really love. Like, either way, there's a good thing I think that can really come out of that. So, and that was the best part of the show to me, other than the obviously the main event. But the next topic I was going to bring up to you guys was we talked about it again on the YouTube channel, and it kind of was brought up that, you know, Legado del Fantasma, you know, returned or came into on the main roster tonight. And
finally.
I mean, it was, yeah, right. It was fine. Like, I was glad to see them for sure. I mean, I'm excited for what Santos can do on the main roster. I mean, there's no question. I guess, you know, they've been heels. So, you know, again, like, I see, I guess, why they've come up as heels on the main roster with Zelina, who I'm excited with them with Zelina. I think Zelina with them could be a lot of good stuff could happen there because she's just awesome on the mic and just such a great talker. But I really thought, and I know Zach and I brought it up, I really think they should be baby faces coming, because I really think the crowd would have wanted to cheer them and get excited about them. And there's so many heels, a lot of heel factions going on right now, that I just don't think that's going to do them a lot of good. So, you know, Zach, kind of elaborate on what you think now after what you saw in the Bruce, what do you think about what they did tonight with them?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough. Like, I think I'm in this position where I'm like watching Santos Escobar and Legado del Fantasma and Zelina Vega. I think collectively, like, they're all, and that faction in general is better as heels. However, you know, the fact that they are heels now, and you have the Bloodline, who are a heel faction at the top of the card, like, you kind of have this heel Legado faction that now has to be in the middle to the bottom of the card, working with, you know, the Hit Row groups of the world, and so I think there's just so much upside in that faction, where I think they could be a viable faction to be opposite, like, Jey Uso and the Usos and Roman Reigns at some point. Like, I think they're skilled enough to do that as baby faces. And so I think there's more opportunity for them on the main roster as baby faces. That's more main event level. So I think they're going to be fine in the end, but because they're heels right now, I think they're going to be doing more, you know, Hit Row type level feuds and less stuff at the top of the card. So that's my take. I thought tonight was fine. I thought Zelina Vega, you know, she's going to be great in this role. She's a fantastic manager, and I think brings a lot to that faction. So I think all good, but more opportunity as baby faces. But Bruce, you've been watching these guys since the very beginning. What did you think of tonight that they finally made their main roster debut?
So there's been a running joke on PWP's NXT, mostly to do with Cameron Grimes, and that pretty much since he debuted, we've been saying, oh, yeah, he's moving to the main roster soon. And it's been about 2 years, and Cameron Grimes is still on NXT. Legado del Fantasma is probably in second place for the amount of time that we predicted that they would move up, and they never did. They finally did it here, and I was glad to see. The rumor that Zelina Vega would take the place of Electra Lopez was true. There are pros and cons to both. So, with Electra Lopez, the biggest pro is that she had a distinct presence to her, not just because she was taller and bigger than most women in the division, but because she exuded a sense of confidence about her. The biggest con, of course, is that she is not ready for television and wrestling. So they would have had to turn her into a manager at best if she when they got called to SmackDown. But Zelina Vega, she lacks that sort of presence in a certain way because of size, even though she has charisma. But the biggest pro is that she's also a trained wrestler who's also a very good manager. So she can do a little bit of everything for them. Now, I hate to break to the both of you, but I mean, how many kidnappings did they do in the parking lot in NXT, and how many times did they boot up someone's car and things like that? So the thing, though, with Legado del Fantasma is, even though they always were heel in disposition and character, the fans, at least in the arena, always cheered for them, regardless of their disposition. It made no sense whatsoever, because they just refused to go along with them because of how cool Legado del Fantasma came off, mostly because Santos Escobar is just a cool dude. Why he had a mask on for so long, I mean, you know, luchadors and everything, that's a different thing, but, you know, you look at the guy, he's handsome, he's confident, he has a good sense of style, he exudes charisma and intelligence and all these things. I mean, there's a reason why he's the leader, and there's a reason why fans appreciated them and loved them so much, regardless of how they work. So I think they may function more as tweeners, depending on who they're going against. They could lean heel, they could lean face. Their style is very face, even though their characters are very heel. So I think they're in a great position because they're on the show that tends to favor wrestling more, even now, not just 15 years ago, but even now. And they are needed in terms of having fresh faces in the tag team division, not just for the Usos, but the New Day. And then we saw a vignette tonight for the Viking Raiders, who seem to have Sarah Logan back. So I think Triple H is trying to revamp the tag team division and make sure that it's strong, because in NXT, everything was a strong point, but they also had a strong tag team division when Triple H was the booker. And I think he's trying to maintain consistency and quality throughout all the divisions within WWE, which is much harder now that he's maintaining three shows instead of just two.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah, good stuff. I think this, and this is not a cop out, but it's just this one, Sean. I think may be a wait and see type thing, and mm-hmm. see kind of how they do. You know, I mean, I think it's mm-hmm. good. If nothing else, this is good for the depth of SmackDown. I think they needed an influx of new talent, and Santos is really good. You know, he's really good. He's really good on the mic. He's tremendous in the ring, and so this is. I mean, I hope they can kind of look. I mean, the Hit Row feud is fine. Like, it's a fine, you know, kind of starter feud, and and that's that. I mean, it's fine, and we'll see where things go. But I think overall, it's just a good play to freshen up that show, regardless of whether or not, you know, they should be babyfaces or heels. But it was fun to see him out there. It was a good. It's been a long time coming. Sean, what do you think about everything we said?
No, I definitely agree. Because Bruce, you brought up the point about the tag team division. It's just been such a, you know, one good tag team and a lot of other just mid range, not, you know, great tag teams. And I think he just wants, Triple H wants to have the depth and the talent too to go along with that. And I think now they're starting to build that up little by little, which I like. I mean, I really enjoyed that. And so, I was pumped to have them up on the main roster. I thought it was really good. So I thought overall it worked. The first thing I was going to say too, I mean, I love all the callers, and I'll get to them. I'll let them get on here in a second. But Nick from Brattleboro, we miss you, man. We haven't heard from you in a while. I hope you get back on at some point. I know you're just doing your thing, and that's cool, but you know, we'd love to have you on. Kyle, where are you at, man? I want to hear your thoughts on Liv, man. Where are you? I need to hear what you think about Liv Morgan. Like, come on. I need you. But anyway,
come
the
on, Kyle.
Topic
come
I'll
on,
bring
Nick.
Up was, yeah, I know. So, last topic I'll bring up real quick was Karrion and Drew, because it was the Extreme Rules match that they built up the most tonight, because other than that, there wasn't a lot of Extreme Rules really hype, you know, going into it. But it was mostly a lot of Raw stuff, and I get it. But with Karrion and Drew, I don't know what I thought about it. I thought it was okay. I thought they built heat on Cross, which was fine. But I didn't like. Okay, so I'm not trying to over like say this whole segment, but like, you know, you have Drew come from behind and attack him. Get you know, the advantage on him, and then the security comes in, and then what they're doing, their job, they're trying to kind of keep order as much as they can, and then they're saying, you know, then Cole says, well, security was distracting Drew, and I'm like, security doesn't distract anybody. They're trying to get Drew out of the way and trying to evade any issue, and then so he's distracted, so Drew kind of looks bad for, you know, having to walk away from this, and then Karrion attacks him from behind. I mean, I guess it was fine. I don't know. It just seemed weird to me how they did it. But ultimately, I mean, it worked to get heat on Cross. I think he's been better the last couple weeks. I still don't really love him, but I think they're doing okay. So I just want to hear what you guys thought about the segment. You know, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? And that's all I got. Zach, I appreciate you, man. I wish I could, you know, talk with you tomorrow for the show, but I'll be doing some other stuff. I can't get on, but I hope to. One of these PLEs pretty soon. I hope I can get on and talk with you guys. Bruce, always good to talk to you, man. Thanks for you guys taking my call, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks for making it, Sean. Always good to talk to you, too. Have a good weekend. So, yeah, I'm mixed on on this angle, too, because I thought, like, the concept of it and like the logic behind it in terms of like security guards and, you know, why were they working to get like Drew McIntyre, like calling out of the picture, but not, they didn't seem to have as much urgency with Karrion Kross. So I thought the logic there was flawed for sure. And unfortunately you can't just remove the logic from these angles. But once I get past the logic of it that Sean pointed out and the inconsistency there, I thought it was a good angle. I mean, dude, Karrion Kross was whipping the hell out of Drew McIntyre with that strap. I mean, my gosh, that was some really intense stuff. And so I think to that end, the angle was successful in the end, as Sean said. But yeah, how they got there, Bruce, I think was a little bit rough, but a fine kind of go home angle for tomorrow night.
I think I'm higher on this than both of you simply because I think it was a better build than listening to either of them talk or both of them talk tonight. I also think that the security guards going after McIntyre makes sense because he was the one that was attacking Kross to begin with and trying to attach the strap to him to do more damage. So I think if you're running out there in the heat of things, you're going to go after the person who's instigating all the physical attacks. And then, you know, by the time Kross came to, all the security was taken out by McIntyre. So there wasn't any security left for Kross to have to fend off. I also think that it wasn't just that he was whipping him hard. He folded the strap in on itself to double it up, and then he whipped him, so it's even more strap coming down on him. And that did not sound very pleasant, nor do I ever want to experience what that's like. So good on you, Drew McIntyre, I guess. And I think, you know, we haven't seen a strap match in WWE, at least in my memory, the last half decade, if not more. So unless The Fiend did something, but I can't remember, you know, this or a bull rope match. The one that I remember the most, of course, is JBL and Eddie Guerrero because that was right when I was growing up. I know there was some classic ones in the 80s, but there was that one between those two, which kind of gives you an idea of what – it's a different thing with the four corners, but that strap, goodness, being able to use it and whatnot and the sound. I think the best thing they did was give everyone a preview of what's to come because they haven't done this so often. So I think this – was probably as good of a Karrion Kross segment as you could expect or ask for, especially because as soon as he started doing his pose in the ring with Scarlett, Drew McIntyre popped up behind him like Keith Lee or The Fiend or something, and it just went from there. There was no preamble. There was no, oh, I'm going to say something. It was just right to it because what's left to be said between these two? So I think they hit the right mark here.
Yeah, good argument. Good argument. And I think they did too. I think, yeah, they gave everybody a taste and they didn't overdo it either to leave people wanting more too. And so I think that's important. I mean, Karrion Kross, I mean, what's his upside, Bruce, on the main roster based on what you saw tonight and based on what you've seen in NXT and thus far on the main roster, Vince era side? Is this, like, does he have a higher ceiling than what we've seen? Is this kind of the range that you expect for him or, you know, can he get to the level of, hey, you know, he's going to be a player in main eventing big shows for WWE.
Considering the fact that Triple H made him NXT champion, I think that he is going to be someone in the main event for a while or years to come. And I don't think that's the right call necessarily, but it all comes down to what Wade had reported on before when he was released in the first place is his refusal to take bumps. And if he has changed that and he's going to take bumps and be in more, you know, competitive, worthwhile matches, then I think that'll go a long way. However, Kross has never been known to be someone who was a mat technician or a ring wizard. So he's going to have good dance partners. Drew McIntyre is a good dance partner for anybody right now in WWE, not only because he has the credibility, but Drew can have really any kind of match with anybody, whether it's him and Sheamus having those brutal matches around the pandemic when it started, or him going up against anyone who's lighter of build, like a Finn Balor or Rey Mysterio. He can have those kind of matches, or a big man match. It really doesn't matter who he's in there with. He can adapt. And so for Kross, I think, you know, the best thing they did with him is his presentation of being more realistic as, I guess, a biker or biker leathers at least. It's not that gladiator stuff. It's not even what he was in NXT. It just seems more like what Triple H would have dressed like in the early 2000s. So I think that's another reason why Triple H likes him so much. But that helps. And, you know, Scarlett maybe can stop lip-syncing the intro, but her presence
that'd be good. That would be good.
Her presence definitely adds something to his act that he doesn't have alone. Not even just because he had the gladiator outfit before, but she not just her look, but she has a confidence about her that not every manager can pull off without overshadowing their client to I guess for lack of a better term. So I fully expect her to play some part in the match tomorrow night, but I think Cross got his tonight and McIntyre is going to be the one to go over tomorrow night, unless Triple H wants to start that push with Cross as the main event now. But I think that'd be the bad call because I don't see him being the one to defeat Roman Reigns.
Yeah, oh no, I don't either. The booking of tonight, I mean, really, it kind of makes tomorrow a little more blurry as far as where they may go. Because I think if you had if Drew McIntyre tonight gets the kind of just the upper hand and he just attacks Karrion Kross from behind, Claymore, pose, and then they get out of there, like, then I'm like just very inclined to stick with my prediction of okay, Karrion Kross is gonna win this thing. But now it really is kind of up in the air based on how they booked that tonight. Like, are you really gonna see Karrion Kross get the best of Drew McIntyre two nights in a row? Like, I mean, that would be pretty big, but I don't know that I see it happening either.
Yeah, it'd be a bold call, and in a show that seems to have a lot of predictable outcomes to them, I'd say a bold call or two may not be the worst idea.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of think that, like, you know, it's the right – I don't know. I'm not high on Karrion Kross, but I am high on if you're going to pick a guy to go with, like, go with him, you know, and give him the wins that he needs and don't hedge. And I don't know that you can – like, I don't know what happened – like, how Karrion Kross keeps momentum if he loses clean to Drew McIntyre tomorrow night. So I kind of think it's a weird booking position to be in if you're Paul Levesque. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, I did say that I don't think it's right because I don't see him being the one to go over Roman Reigns, but right now it may be the best call because aside from a returning Cody Rhodes, he's – who's left on the SmackDown roster for Reigns to legitimately feud with, because you can't do Gunther and him right now, or even by WrestleMania, because of their trajectories would lead you to think that, but they need to be kept separate so that each can build up their own mystique, and then if they do clash, or if they don't clash, either way, they're both protected. So I think that Cross might be the best call right now, even if he's not going to defeat Reigns. Maybe they do the Triple H Shawn Michaels SummerSlam 02 where, you know, Reigns goes over in the match, but Cross immediately attacks him and tries to, you know, lays him out of it before the bloodline comes to save him or something. I don't know. But, you know, a bull call here, a bull call in, you know, the one of the women's championship matches, I think that'd be a good way to keep the fans on their toes.
Well said. All right, let's keep the callers going. 914, you are up next. 914, thanks for holding. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, guys, Brad in New York. Thanks for having me on for a minute.
Hey, what's up, Brad? Good to hear from you. What did you think of the show?
Hey, Zach and Bruce, you know, thanks for having me on, guys. Well, you know, first of all, at the top, I did not, like, love this show that much tonight. And, you know, at the top, I thought it was kind of weird how Triple H said, "Welcome to Fox!" Like, I just thought that was really bizarre. And the crowd was like, okay. And he's like, "And welcome to Friday Night SmackDown." And he did the pause after "Welcome to Fox." I don't know. It was just kind of weird. Whatever. That was basically inconsequential, just a funny little thing. Don't even understand why he said it, though. Paul Heyman, honestly, guys, like, I love Paul Heyman. I think he's brilliant. I think he's really, really funny. But lately, and it really started for me at the Madison Square Garden show, which I was actually at, not that that matters, but he's going on and on and on. It's like his speeches his little things have gotten longer and longer and longer, and it's almost seeming like I'm a guy who thinks I'm more important than anyone else. And I'm not saying that he has some ego problem or something, but it's just coming across that way. Like, that was really long-winded and really, honestly, not funny and really not that interesting with Jordan Peterson. And then he's going on about Jordan Peterson, and then he's going on about Ben Shapiro and his yarmulke, and then he's going on about someone else and the bathing suit model. And it all meant nothing. It was all so stupid. And then I'm sitting there looking at Roman Reigns, you know, and like kind of like you guys alluded to, and I'm saying, like, I just kind of want him to say a little bit more. I don't want this Paul Heyman diatribe going on for what felt like 10 minutes. It was ridiculous to me. I don't know if you guys felt that, but I think that's the reason why the segment fell flat. And again, this is coming from, you know, a big Paul Heyman fan in myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point. It's a good point. And I felt that it did drag a bit. But I think also, like, he doesn't have much to work with either. And that doesn't mean, like, you know, look, if you're Paul Levesque, you should recognize that and maybe not, don't book the segment to be, you know, 10 minutes or whatever it ended up being. And book something else, make it shorter. But he really doesn't have the material to work with Logan Paul that he does with, you know, really any other wrestler on the roster. So I'll give him that. But I think that, accompanied with the fact that you let Roman Reigns talk, I think then you have a real problem, because he just eviscerates Logan Paul with his charisma and his star power and just his presence in a wrestling ring, that does so in a way that I think just really hurts Paul. So, like, you add those things together, not enough content to go with, not enough material, and then Heyman having to, like, pretty much take all of Reigns' time on the mic too, that's just a bad combination. And I'm with you. I didn't think it worked very well. Bruce?
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here, not too much. So I think Heyman was trying to make the point that you're not much better than these trash people in society, which, okay, but then you're burying the supposed baby face in the match by saying that he's pretty much scum. So that's a bit odd. Now, considering who's in the ring, as Zach said, I would rather have had Paul Heyman talk than the others for however long. And I'm okay with Heyman talking longer and Reigns not talking as much, because it makes what Reigns says more impactful. It makes every action that Reigns does more impactful. Him, in the ring, he didn't say anything to Jey Uso on the mic. He just turned and looked at him, and it said so much, just the look and the body language of Roman Reigns to his cousin, that you didn't need him to say anything. And then back in the locker room, he said a few things. But that's the thing, Jay. You've always been a hothead. It's been plaguing us our whole life. And it's not going to be my problem anymore. It's yours, it's Sammy. And one, I just love how dutifully Sammy took the task. Like, oh, okay, I guess I'm his new manager or something. But two, it made, you know, Roman saying that, because he hadn't said anything else all night, it made those words and the eventual sort of ramifications of what he said have that much more impact because of how judiciously he decides to speak. It reminds me of the early Brock Lesnar-Paul Heyman pairing in 2002-2003, when Brock would only speak to tell Heyman to shut up and say a few words and then walk away. It's a similar dynamic, but in a different way. And I think, for me, that is what works about it. So everything you said about the content of Heyman's promo tonight is valid.
All right, good stuff.
Yeah.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah, again, I just thought the content was, you know, with this one doesn't have the balls, and that one doesn't have the balls, and she doesn't have the balls, and it just got so repetitive and redundant. I just, again, it was about his delivery to me more so than it was what the point he was trying to get across, regardless, whatever. Wade Barrett, I thought, was really good, and you could tell that he hit his stride more towards the end of the show. I do think he was a little bit nervous at the beginning of the show. Like, I almost felt it, you know, like he wasn't himself, you know, freely chiming in. You could tell he was kind of waiting for Cole's lead. And then as the show went on and on, he got more into a comfort zone. And I think that's going to be a really good pairing going forward. I know, you know, look, I think we're all Wade Barrett fans. I mean, it's pretty hard not to like him. And, you know, he's very funny and he's got a great voice. And I'm just a big fan of his. So I hope that gets better and better. But I do think he was a little nervous at the beginning. You know, for me, like, with Gunther tapping out, like, do you guys draw any similarities to that and Liv Morgan, like, where she tapped out but then got the pin? Yeah, I know it wasn't simultaneous like that, but, like, if that's the case, then Gunther should be mercilessly booed, and, you know, you tapped out chance and everything. I mean, do you think that's what they're going for? Because, you know, with Liv, obviously it made her look weak. With Gunther, I highly doubt they want to make him look weak. Or do you think that that was an actual blunder in the match that Sheamus played, you know, played up to the ref and everything that wasn't even supposed to happen, that Gunther was actually just trying to kind of, you know, reach or get his bearings, and it ended up being that his hand hit the mat twice? So I'm just curious what you guys think of that.
So I took it as... you know, storyline, like, all the way. And really, the main reason for that was how quickly the announce team pounced on what happened and explained what happened, like, right away. Like, they jumped in right away, like, oh, man, did he tap? Oh, no, he was just kind of using that hand to go towards the ropes. And so to me, that's the vibe that I got with it all the way. Also, you know, the finish of the match was not, you know, was Sheamus losing. So Gunther, like, tapping out there and making that kind of mistake is like really, really egregious for somebody of that caliber. Like, that's such a miss to, like, forget the finish entirely, including the fact that you're supposed to go over. So I don't think that was the case. It's dangerously close to the Liv Morgan Ronda Rousey finish, and I very much disliked that finish. The only difference here, to me, Bruce, is the perspective that the announce team put on. They explained it away, you know, pretty quickly, and moved on. And so I think, you know, if anything, you know, Sheamus didn't win, but Liv Morgan did, and I think that hurt Liv Morgan. Whereas here, you know, Sheamus is not going to, like, lean into, hey, you know, you really tapped out, because it's not something a babyface really, really does. I mean, he can, but I just don't imagine, like, the Sheamus character getting hung up on that. I think they're just going to win the match tomorrow and kind of move on. And now that maybe there's a third match down the road between the two. But yeah, this to me was staged, and it wasn't executed perfectly. And like I said at the top, just a bizarre kind of finish that I think as a standalone made sense here, but in the background of all the other distraction finishes and stuff that we've seen in WWE lately, like it did kind of sour everything up. But Bruce, what did you think? Do you have a different perspective on that?
Yeah, maybe because I've watched a lot of MMA in my life, I didn't take it as a tap. I thought he was reaching out for the bottom rope and was trying to make it there, and his hand just kind of came down in like a tapping motion because of his reach. So I...
Well, that's good, because that's, I think, the story they were trying to tell. So that's really interesting perspective that it hit for you in that way. Good stuff.
And, you know, I am going back and forth to my report and watching it, but to me, it didn't seem like an actual fake tap. And it wasn't just the announcers. Referee Jessica Carr also jumped on it early and said it wasn't a tap. She said it wasn't a tap. It wasn't a tap. He was reaching for the ropes. So I think it was just something where as he was reaching, he didn't realize how far he was, and his hand came down almost as a tap. So that's my perspective. But, you know, the ending wasn't the greatest. But I think they played it off well. And even if that wasn't the plan, I think this gives them an avenue to have at maybe at Survivor Series War Games or something, another Sheamus Gunther Intercontinental Championship match. I'd rather not have it at Crown Jewel, for one. That's another reason. But Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes can play up the fact that it looked like he tapped, and that you can make an argument that he tapped. So Sheamus should have won the match, even though the ref immediately said no, and the WWE could say, you know, the official immediately said no, there's no merit, blah, blah, blah. But he could build up enough fan support that eventually he persuades Adam Pearce to book the match or something. So it's going to be one of those blessings in disguise to a certain extent.
Yeah, no, very much so. I'd go with the match again. I mean, we'll have to see kind of what the rating comes in at, but I'd have to imagine it's pretty decent. And they built a really nice feud here, and one that I think has gotten Gunther more over, even with tonight's finish. So I think that's probably in the cards at some point. I hope it doesn't happen at Crown Jewel either.
Yeah, I tweeted that I favor two types of matches. The first type is technical masterpieces, Bryan Danielson, Bret Hart, David Garcia, you name it. I love those kind of matches. My second one is big, meaty men slapping meat or strong style. And tonight it was big, meaty men slapping meat. And that's all and for a TV main event, I think this is the top end of what you could expect or what you would hope for a TV main event.
Yeah. Good stuff. Brad, back to you.
Yeah, my last point is just, and thank you for that, guys. My last point is just on, like, how much evil are we supposed to, like, love? Now, look, I know a lot of people like the dark side and the creep, giving you the creeps. And, I mean, I get a QR code with pigs and cartoon pigs being slaughtered at the beginning of the show. Then I get Scarlett coming in like a witch demon singing her song. Then I'm getting the Viking Raiders with this creepy woman's voice with some sort of vignette. I guess was them with their shields. I mean, it's just kind of like enough already. Strangely, like the Judgment Day is no longer at all the creepiest thing on this platform of WWE. It's now
they're kind of funny
everything.
Now.
Yeah, it's like everything. Like everything has gotten so creepy and dark. I shouldn't say everything. But there's just a lot of it, and it's not something that I personally am drawn to. Now, I know there's a lot of people that are and a lot of people that love it and think it's great and, oh, how cool. But, I mean, do you guys see what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot of evil mixed in, and I'm not just talking about bad people doing mean things, like, oh, you broke Edge's leg, oh, you beat up Asuka, and, you know, Montez Ford's in a walking boot because
wrestler.
Of you or whatever. Yeah, right. I'm talking about, like, straight up, like, devil worshipy type of stuff, and I don't know, man. You know, I do like that the WWE tends to have a family oriented feel to it at times, and you know, it's not my favorite cup of tea, but just wanted your thoughts on that. And I do want to hear what you have to say about Wade Barrett really quick, because you didn't address that, but great show, guys, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Brad, yeah, we'll definitely get to Wade Barrett. Thanks so much. Appreciate the call. Make sure to call again. Thank you. I'm going to put a pin in the Wade Barrett thing because I want to get to the kind of the idea of lots of evil stuff happening on the show. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of it. I mean, Triple H, he likes his skulls. He likes his skulls. It's getting there. I mean, it's getting there. I think Triple H would say, well, you know, the Viking Raiders are Viking Raiders, and Karrion Kross is whatever he is, and Bray Wyatt's a little bit different, if that's what it is. So, I mean, I would say, Brad, first, let's see what happens with the White Rabbit thing and Bray Wyatt at Extreme Rules tomorrow, because we got I'm assuming we got confirmation that we're going to get another either a reveal or like a major chapter in whatever that is. So because maybe that's not like dark and twisted, but my guess is that it is. And I don't know, like I think, yeah, you run the risk, Bruce, of those gimmicks blending too much together and being too much alike. And I mean, how do you differentiate like Bray Wyatt from Karrion Kross from Judgment Day and whatever else they have going on? So you run that risk to be sure. I'd be careful with it without question, you know, especially if you're going to present those acts as big time deals, and you don't want, like, you know, if Karrion Kross ends up like sticking up the joint with his gimmick and it's exactly like whatever Bray Wyatt's going to come in as, like, what does that say? What does that say about Wyatt? So you don't want them taking heat away from each other's either. So I think it's something to watch. It's not something that has stood out to me that much yet, but yeah, I mean, look, you wouldn't want to have, you don't want to have three Roman Reigns on the show, or three Roman, like, stars like Roman Reigns on the show, because you want him to stand out. I think the same rule applies here. We just got to see how it goes. Are you worried about that, Bruce?
To a certain extent, I guess you could say so. It's all about the shades and what they do with the differences. So if people didn't know, Karrion Kross's first name, Karrion, is a play on words of the word carrion with the C, which is like dead or rotting flesh, or especially animal flesh, which plays into his intro video and everything, even going back to NXT. So it makes sense why he will fall that way. I'm not sure if the Viking Raiders are necessarily going to be heels, or just that because of the Viking mythos of dying in battle to reach Valhalla, they're just going to be some really aggressive-ass people. And that's also something that you could have in a tag team division, especially with their size and demeanor. I just hope they stop yelling so much. So when it comes to the evilness, the thing with Bray Wyatt is Karrion Kross tends to be more direct and more physical with his kind of evil, whereas Bray Wyatt's evil is really about the mind games and the psychological aspect that eventually turns into the physical aspect. So there are shades of differences. It's just, can they keep those differences both unique and going on long enough that there isn't a blending of the two, not just Karrion Kross and the Fiend, but between any type of evil sort of character. Like, you know, Judgment Day, I brought up how they're just funny now. They kind of have taken on more of a comedic bend to them. And it goes back to when that clip on Raw, or that screenshot everyone has of Judgment Day just pointing and laughing at Rey Mysterio in the ring because Dominic turned on them. But ever since then, they haven't come off as... So DX, when they first started, kind of seemed a little bit serious. And then it just kind of just became all comedy. And I think Judgment Day isn't going that route so drastically. But to me, when I watch them, I'm more entertained by the comedy with them than I am with them trying to be all spooky and stuff. So there are ways you can go about this and make it work. It's just, do they have the patience? And, you know, they hired the creator or the director of long-term storytelling. So maybe he will help, having his experience in Marvel and other places in Disney, and not just in terms of keeping the stories going for a long time, but keeping them separate enough to where they feel different. Think about the MCU and how many things they have, and yet they've been able to maintain, for the most part, a unique identity for each one of its entities within the MCU. I think that's what they need to strive for here with these kind of characters.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's really well said. And yeah, another thing to keep an eye on, without question. So, Bruce, Wade Barrett, did you think he had a good night?
I really hope when football season's done and Pat McAfee comes back, they bring Wade Barrett back to NXT, because why did you have to leave Wade and then replace with Booker T? Like, am I going to make it on Tuesday nights now? It's just,
I don't know, man. I don't know that you are.
So Variety definitely gave me some bad news yesterday with that article. But I did think it was interesting that a day after the new announced teams were announced, we didn't see either Caleb Braxton or Megan Morant in the back for any backstage announcing segment. So that was a bit odd to me. But Wade, I think, worked fine. He brought up his NXT history in very unique ways. So when Max Dupree said, "I'm L.A. Knight," yeah, he goes, "I knew that was L.A. Knight. I knew that was him all along." So he's bringing it up in comedic comedic ways, but ways that let you know that he has history with them. Same thing with Legado del Fantasma. But, oh, I know who they are. Like, you know, those kind of things that I think it's the little things that make you a great announcer. And he's doing those little things right now to help separate himself. Now that he's on a larger platform, I think he knows exactly what he's doing to blend his experience with NXT and what he's watching now on SmackDown. So for me, he's going to be a boon for SmackDown. I think Michael Cole is going to love calling things with Wade Barrett and not Corey Graves. I know Pat McAfee he loved too, but now he has a legitimate, intelligent wrestler who was very successful and has been able to translate that success to the announce booth. So I'm looking forward to what these two do together now that Michael Cole has some of the limiters removed off of him. And, you know, he was even calling moves tonight, although incorrectly, but he was calling moves. And that is not a Michael Cole thing you used to hear under Vince McMahon. So I'm looking forward to what they do moving forward. And again, at the end of college football season, please come back to NXT, Wade. Please, please come back.
I agree. I thought, I thought there were moments where, yeah, especially at the beginning, he came across a little, not necessarily nervous even, but just, you know, just kind of feeling everything out. Just kind of feeling everything out. It's his first time on Fox, a major network, a big, you know, a big promotion and a big elevation in terms of, you know, the responsibility that he has on this show as opposed to NXT. But I think he really came into his own and kind of found his comfort as the night went on. And the other thing is, like, I like the idea of just switching up these announce teams just as a matter of principle to keep these shows fresh. I mean, these things are 52 weeks a year. They have the same stages. They got the same music. Like, you know, they get very similar regularly. And I think like a little tune up with new announcers just adds a little bit of freshness and a new flair and a new tone and a new sound to the show that's compelling for me. And uh-huh. So I like that, you know, even if like, okay, Wade Barrett only did a mediocre job. I don't think that's the case, but let's say that it was. I still think that there's value in switching up those announce teams on a regular basis.
Yeah, and real quick, just so Kevin Patrick, I've only heard good things about, and when he was a backstage announcer on Raw, I know I'm moving to Raw real quick, he's done really well, so I look forward to that. The one good thing about NXT is they kept Mackenzie Mitchell and Samantha Irvin, which is really good for the ring announcing and the backstage segments. I do think it's interesting if you look at the whole, how slowly but surely over the last couple years, SmackDown has shifted to being the one that has the first season premiere, the first night of the draft, whereas right. In the past, it was always Raw. So just keep that in mind moving forward and see if that pattern holds up throughout the years, because if there is a draft coming anytime soon, it'll most likely be the first night on SmackDown. And if that pattern holds up as the viewership maintains for SmackDown over Raw, then how quickly do they start calling SmackDown the A show, or is Raw just the A show by virtue of a legacy? I think that's an interesting dynamic to watch moving forward, because it's not something that we've really had throughout the tenure of these two shows over the past two decades.
Yeah, well said. I think Triple H, if he heard you say that, he'd be like, no. There's two A shows.
You can't have two A shows. It doesn't work that way.
That's it. You can wish it into existence all you want, but
Tony Khan finding this out on Wednesday and Friday night.
Yes, he is. Good point. Let's see here. We've got we got Javier on deck. So we're gonna go to you in 1 second. I'm gonna hit that jingle and I'm gonna smile and be happy about it. But before we do, what, Bruce, did you think of kind of the go home hype for the White Rabbit stuff? Like, it was a lot more overt tonight. You had the bunny sitting behind the announce team. You had the QR code on the microphone that Triple H, Paul Levesque, was holding in the ring. And then you got, like, just an overt tease for tomorrow night, that something with this White Rabbit thing is going to happen tomorrow night. I think it was a smart call. I think it was a smart call to, like, tease this in a little more heavy-handed way so that people can look forward to some sort of payoff at the Extreme Rules PLE. So I was okay with it, and I think what it also took into account was, hey, a lot of the audience did not go through the steps and the QR codes and checking coordinates and all these things. Like, so they just want to know, like, hey, what's going on with this, and when will something happen? And I think this gave them that answer too. So it worked for me. I give it a thumbs up. But where are you at?
Yeah, so the person I mentioned as the director of long-term storytelling, I believe, has also been involved in all this White Rabbit stuff. And if you go off of how much fan kind of engagement there's been with this story over the past, I don't know, 2 months or so, that's a success because they're still wanting to know what's going on and what's happening. So the graphic at the end, I wondered if it was a typo, but they played it twice and it was the same one. At first, I thought it said save your hero or something like that, but it said save your head. And so immediately I go, oh, it's Al Snow, of course. So we're going to look forward to Al Snow debuting tomorrow night at Extreme Rules as the White Rabbit. But on a serious note, it's probably Bray Wyatt as the Fiend. I would like to see if he could come back as more of a blending between the two instead of such a stark contrast, especially if the Fiend is still going to be a no-selling in-ring wrestler, which I hope is not the case. But going back to I think Brad's point about the evil faction, it seems like he's going to come back and have at least one or two people associated with him as another evil faction. So, again, it's all about those shades, and they're about the mind games and whatnot. But I do believe that we will see if they don't debut tomorrow night, then it's really just a big-time swerve, and they lose a lot of fan trust with that.
And
if it's not the Fiend, then the only other answer is Justin Gabriel in the bunny outfit.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, they got to pay this off tomorrow, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. I mean, I and it's not that I don't even dislike the story. I do. Like, I think it's been cool, and it's been cool on multiple levels. And, you know, if you want to get into it and really, like, go down the, oh, gosh, I'm going to say it, but rabbit hole, so to speak, like, you can. If you want to just kind of wait and see what happens, you can do that too, and I like it. But there comes a time where it's like it's time to pay it off. It's time to get on with it, and it looks like that's going to happen tomorrow. And I think that's the right call. Okay, well, without further ado, you can call us. The phone lines are still open, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. So the phone lines are open if you want to connect and say a few words. But that said, we go to Javier. Oh, I just love hearing that jingle going into the weekend. Javier, what's going on, man?
Hey, Zach. Hey, Bruce. Bruce, is the jingle thumbs up or thumbs down for you?
It's thumbs up. I don't see an issue with it. But it's been a long time, Javier. How have you been?
How's it going? We keep missing each other. I think you're on with Zach a lot, and I apologize to Zach because I know I was missing him a lot. And I apologize because I didn't want him to think that I was avoiding him. So,
quote unquote missing him, yeah.
It's just Zach's smell.
I would have to, I can't take my shots if I don't talk to you, so, you know.
You're right, yeah, see, right. You got to be here to deliver, that's right.
What did you say that it said? Because I think you said for your head. It actually says feed your head.
Feed your head.
Yeah. By the way, I made the same connection. I thought the same thing. Now,
guys, if it's Al Snow, I'm going to blame both of you, and that's it.
The thing is, I'm wondering if with the previous caller mentioned about all the spooky stuff, do you think there's a possibility that they might all be connected? Because I believe one of them spelled out the word demon. Now, a lot of it might be because those are also when a lot of the QR codes flashed. But what if they're all connected? Because I was thinking with the whole motif of Alice in Wonderland, you have a lot of characters in that could actually fit several of the wrestlers that whose names or forms have dropped. Balor has always been complaining that he's always smiling, so he could be Cheshire Cat. Alexa Bliss can be Alice. Scarlett can be the Duchess. Or the Queen of Hearts.
Who's the Queen of Hearts?
Specific different wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had heard that Zelina Vega was coming back, and I was like, well, she's either coming out with Legado de Fantasma or she's going to be the Queen of Hearts. Apparently it's Legado. But yeah, so you think this might actually be a much larger, because I'm fairly sure Karrion Kross is part of the, is going to be with him. That's why I think that Karrion Kross does lose. Because he's just going to be a heater for Bray Wyatt. That is my hope, because I really don't think that he has enough of the crowd behind him to be involved in the main event with Roman Reigns or that sort of stuff. I think he serves better as someone as the heater for somebody else.
I mean, look, I certainly think that that's possible. You know, it's definitely possible, and I think that'd be a pleasant surprise, to be honest. You know, but I don't know that there's enough kind of intel and detail to really say one way or the other, like definitively at this point, or even to like make a good guess. I mean, I think it'd be really interesting and something that you haven't seen from WWE in quite some time, if ever, depending on just the depth of which they go to tell this story with multiple characters. So, I mean, the bottom line is I would give it a thumbs up, you know, from an attempt perspective, and then we have to kind of wait and see and grade it out as it goes. But I'd be in on it for sure, and I think it would create a big splash, but not for just big splash sake. Like this would be, if they go that route, it would be like a main story thread throughout all of WWE, right? And that's that's big time, and I think like. That's big time, and I mean, and it kind of makes good on what Bray Wyatt was missing before outside of the ring work. But it was just like a place to go with all the things that he said and the characters that he played. It's just kind of like once they were there, they didn't have a future really. And I think this type of story would give him that. I mean, Bruce, where are you at?
First thing is. If I didn't know any better, I'd say Javier is writing Alice in Wonderland, ex-WWE fanfic over there in Miami. But the other thing is, the more I think about it, if you put Kross with Wyatt, then what's the point of him having this big-time feud with McIntyre? It's arguably the second biggest feud on the show after Roman Reigns and whoever he's feuding with at the time. So right now it's Logan Paul, but it just – I think what you would do in that regard is if you put him in the same group with Wyatt – if you kind of diminish Karrion Kross as the, with Wyatt as the leader, and I'm not sure if that's the route you want to go with Kross. If you're Triple H and you have any real desires of him being championship level material, so I don't.
I don't think he is. That's what I'm saying. I don't think he is.
But then again, look, in NXT, Triple H thought he was, and I he's given me nothing to suggest that he still doesn't think that.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping he noticed the reaction. That's what I'm hoping. Because he could continue going to that well, and maybe it works. But I think he's fighting, he's going against the stream. You know, so he's fighting. He's swimming upstream. That was. I'm Hispanic. I'm sorry.
Roman Reigns had dropped that line tonight that, hey, 5 years ago they were doing the same thing to me, and now I'm the best in the world. So going against the grain or swimming upstream is nothing new for WWE, even under Triple H.
Yeah.
Well, but here's the other thing with that, though, is that, like, I think you guys are talking, like, the long-term, like, bigger story with Bray at the helm, like that, I mean, I think it would define everybody else that's evolved down, like, beneath it. It just would, like, that's just, that's what has to happen if that's the story that you're telling. And the question is, like, would you be okay with that? And so when I look at, like, okay, like, is it, like, elevate Bray Wyatt and make sure that he has something very significant that you can sink his teeth into, and that makes good on this, 2-month craziness as far as, the story arc goes, like, I think if you're asking me, I'm willing to sacrifice Karrion Kross for that. I'm willing to sacrifice Finn Balor for that. Obviously, I'm willing to sacrifice Zelina Vega for that to make that happen. Because I think I'm a big believer that if you go, I think I said it at the top of the show, if you go big with something like this, I think you really have to go with it, like go all in and give it what it needs. And so, yeah, you know, Karrion Kross would have to take a back seat for a bit, but you know, maybe that's not a bad thing, depending on, and it's all dependent on how it all works out anyway. So it's an interesting thought, Javier. I mean, I'll be hitting you up on the DMs, you know, congratulating you if that's what it says.
The Karrion Kross one, I am fairly confident in. You know, the Balor and the other stuff, that's more speculation just because of some of the clues that were dropped. During Gacy, I think, is another one that was mentioned. So, you know, those would be characters that would fit.
Hey, take Gacy away from NXT for all I care.
that was more speculation based on the clue on the clues that were dropped. I do think for sure Karrion Kross, because is going to be involved, and Bliss, I think, is also for sure going to be involved, because I believe that I'm thinking that Candice LeRae is going to be her replacement in Team Belair. And I think it might, because here's the thing, he's going to be debut. You know, the White Rabbit is we're being told is going to be paid off on tomorrow, and so I'm assuming it's going to be during one of the matches. So, which one of the six matches do you think is going to be the one where he will be debuting it?
Gosh, I mean, I really don't think he'll be the Fight Pit. I don't. That'd be pretty funny.
Well, the Rabbit did go down.
That's true. That's true. But if I had to put my money on it, I'd say probably the ladder match, Bianca Belair and Bayley ladder match, because of the Alexa Bliss connection that's there, and like, I think it has to be in the main event. Like, I don't know. Like, do you put that segment on in the middle of the card? Like, I kind of think it has to be a main event type angle. And so if you're not going to do it in the Fight Pit, like, what's the other main event option? And it's that ladder match most likely. So I kind of say that, but I don't love that pick either.
So I think it was on the 6th this week where Todd and Wade were talking about this exact scenario, and they said, if you do it anywhere other than the main event, then you're already defining down this returning character as nothing more than mid-card because it's not in the main event. So I think the other match that has the potential to be the main event is the I Quit match between Edge and Finn Balor, and that would kind of tie into what Javier was saying about Judgment Day maybe being tied with the Fiend, but that could be the other one, and maybe he then goes into a feud with Edge, and it turns out that he was the one leading Judgment Day all along. That could be something. If it's not the ladder match, though, if the ladder match is main eventing, then that for sure is where it's happening because of his connection to Alexa Bliss. But because I don't think they've actually laid out what the card's going to be or anything, but the issue here, I think, is if the main event isn't that ladder match and it's not the I Quit match, then you really have no other spot to put him in unless you make the strap match the main event. And in no shape, in no era of wrestling, in modern wrestling, you should not have a strap match be your main event. I'm just going to put that out there. You don't want to send the fans home after a strap match. Even as violent as it can get, it is just not a match that can keep the attention, I think, for as long and as consistently as you need to for a main event.
Javier, do you think that match is main eventing?
You want I'm leaning towards the most likely one. Let me paint you a picture since you like that's what you do on the canvas, right, Zach?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Drawing a picture. All right. So, so this is a spoiler for the Extreme Rules primer, which by the way I just sent you. So, so you can put that up when you can.
It's going up. It's going up in 4 minutes. In 4 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, you can read the pay-per-view primer for Extreme Rules.
So, spoiler. I do. If it does end up being the main event, I think that's where Bray Wyatt shows up, and I can picture the following: Drew McIntyre wins a brutal match, Karrion Kross unconscious on the floor, they're strapped together, lights go out, they play Jefferson Airplane, lights come back on, Fiend is strapped to the other side of Drew McIntyre. Show goes off the air.
I'd get a pop, I think. That's for sure.
So maybe that was also set up by how McIntyre appeared tonight behind Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could be.
I mean,
look.
The red lights, too.
Go ahead.
I'm joking at this point, but.
No red light. But don't put that out into the universe.
I do have to hand it to them to get rid of the black and white.
For what?
Because remember they had the black and white during an actual live attack, which is really dumb. The later attacks when they showed them in replay, it was only when they showed it in a replay they did it in black and white, which is fine because that was a replay. The last few attacks by Karrion Kross have not been in black and white, but because that person was just that was the
well.
Stuff
by the way,
really
Zach,
mostly.
Sorry, real quick, Zach, with the red light, don't forget that once the black and white went out tonight from Karrion Kross's entrance, it was a red light. So if he really is connected to the Fiend, that red light's coming back.
I yeah. I guess that's true. But here's the hoping. Here's the hope. Yeah, Javier, go ahead. Any other comments on that?
I also think that Alexa Bliss, which is supposed to be at ringside, is likely going to be missing, or she's probably going to walk out during the match to tease something going on. So I think something's going to happen with Bliss during the during it. I don't think that's when he's going to show up, but it's going to be like he's here kind of thing.
I mean,
I haven't talked about the show. I mean, the show was fine. I kind of read between the lines of what Heyman was saying, because I don't think Heyman was cut. Heyman there was cutting two promos. One promo was what he said, and the other promo he was cutting was, "Look, wrestling fans, we know what this is all about. This is all about getting a celebrity to get some eyes onto the product, and for a match for the Saudi Crown Prince." This whole entire angle is not for you. Here's some Sami Zayn. Please enjoy.
Well, I mean, and everybody did, I think, for the most part. Did you get the sense, Javier? We talked about kind of a Logan Paul and kind of wilting a bit, opposite Roman Reigns in the ring. Did you get the same kind of sense?
I don't know necessarily that. I think it's more disappointment at the "you suck." I think it props to I really do think it. What I was reading in his eyes more like, oh man, this is not going the way I was hoping it would. Less like he wasn't up for the moment, more that he was deflated that things weren't going the way it was. You know what I mean?
Because
people who are charismatic actually have to turn it on, and it feels more like along the lines that it was like, oh yeah, this wasn't supposed to go this way. And I got to give a lot of props to Roman Reigns for reacting the way that he did and saying, oh, they said that about me, so don't worry about it.
That was
great. And I also loved Sami Zayn being made Jay's accountability buddy.
Yes.
So
he's butters.
So You know, so I enjoyed that. I'm glad you're with me on that. The Bruce, that the that Sami Zayn is going to be like the one that pushes everyone the whole bloodline apart. Because I got some pushback on that.
He's
when
the
I brought
camp.
It up. Yeah, because I mean, and I don't think it's like necessarily like he's going to do it on purpose, but it's just like his personality is going to end up like breaking So, but yeah, I mean, it is the strongest storyline, but you can kind of tell that they're setting up more of the internal stuff without Roman Reigns being involved, you know, because he's not going to be around,
yeah.
Or when he is around, he's mainly dealing with Paul until the Saudi show. But, you know, I've enjoying that aspect of it. I did have one more question on the, Extreme Rules, because I compare the previous Extreme Rules when I do the primer, the last year's this one, and last year there was I think only one Extreme Rules match, not
yep.
counting a triple
yep.
threat, which technically by description is, you know, has no rules. This one has all of them, and I was surprised that for the most part they were all earned to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious what you, you know, because, I mean, some I think more than others. What do you think about the actual stipulations, you know, if they were mostly earned and how earned were they?
I very much agree with you on that. And it's kind of the premise of, you know, my Extreme Rules preview column, which will drop later tomorrow. But, I'm with you. Like, it feels almost weird to say that, because these kind of themed WWE pay-per-view events, PLE events, like just in recent history, they've rarely, you know, been booked with this much precision as far as making sure that the matches in the card are ready for the stipulations that the specialty event has. And I think they've done a really good job with that here. Fight Pit makes sense. I think you got the strap match that makes perfect sense. That feud's ready. I think, it's the Extreme Rules match between Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. You know, the ladder match, I think, is the weakest out of all of them, just because it's kind of out of the blue, and it's the first match between the two women. But at the same time, you know, it's a history-making match, too. And so I think that kind of makes it kind of stand on its own. So I'm pleasantly surprised with how it all came together. And I think it's a good sign for the themed pay-per-views down the road. Bruce?
Yeah, so what I like most about how these matches came about is that it wasn't so arbitrary, like, oh, I hit you with the chair just now, so we're having a chairs match, or I threw you
right.
into the stairs, so we're having a stairs match. It all seemed to come more organically. So Morgan and Rousey, the Extreme Rules match, has been built up because Morgan has found ways to basically cheat her way to victory as the face champion. And in this kind of a match, you can't really cheat your way to anything. So that I think that made sense. The Fight Pit match makes a lot of sense with Rollins and Riddle, because their feud has become so personal and they've brought it out with each other and they just go at it. And the little wrinkle of adding a legitimate UFC heavyweight, light heavyweight champion, the only person to defend both at the same time, he was the second person to hold two titles at once in the UFC. Daniel Cormier, I mean, also, he was an Olympian, but he was a great amateur wrestler. He has the legitimacy to be in the Fight Pit and take no guff from either of them. And even the I Quit match, like, they came around to ways to make that happen, because Edge has never, against Judgment Day, even though he brought the team up, he was never, when they turned on him, he's never given up in terms of getting his revenge on them. The ladder match you could quibble with, as that's a little more arbitrary. And then the Donnybrook match between the Brawling Brutes and Imperium, that makes a lot of sense, not only because they're European, but every time these six get into any sort of scene together, all they're doing is getting into a Donnybrook. So I think that's the best part of the stipulations. One, or I guess multiple things. One, they're all different stipulations. It's not all Extreme Rules matches. They all have a different stip, which makes every match unique. And two, all except maybe the ladder match of Bianca Belair and Bayley, came about more organically than you'd expect from a Vince McMahon-led promotion, where it's just, oh, you got hit with the kendo stick, so now we're having a Singapore cane on a pole match, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Javier, back to you.
I agree. Yeah, I do think the ladder match was the weakest one, but they even went as far as to bring up the fact that during Money in the Bank or some ladder match, multi-woman ladder match, that Belair KOD'd Bayley onto the ladder,
mm-hmm.
which is the reason that Bayley
right.
wanted a ladder match to redeem her pride. That was the flimsiest one, but at least it has that, which normally you wouldn't.
And at least they tried
this
to make
come
up
out of
the
air,
reason, like you said.
It's
fun to be. This is the second pay per view that I've really been excited for WWE. So it's nice to and hey, look, only six matches, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my goodness. That really is huge, because I think they've learned that, like, look, everything stands out more if you don't have 12 matches on your shows and you have a crowd that can react to everything. And that's so important. And I agree. Like, I think they, I don't know that tonight's SmackDown was all that effective in, like, because frankly, like, there wasn't that much hype for Extreme Rules tonight. So I don't know, like, if you're judging SmackDown on, hey, how was the final hype for Extreme Rules? Like, it's kind of a miss because it wasn't really there. But at the same time, I think they've got a good pay-per-view coming up. And I think they, like they didn't outright have angles for it, but they had a big long promo for Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey. They had the angle with Drew McIntyre. Like, they covered their bases tonight. And I thought, that was a nice kind of icing on the cake. For tomorrow night. So yeah, thumbs up as far as the pay-per-view goes. I think tomorrow night, guys, like, we'll be talking about a pretty memorable show for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Bruce.
So I know I brought up the AEW comparison earlier, but I want to bring it up again here, because I think it's a good time to look at it. Both AEW and WWE are putting on good shows week in and week out the last month or two. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You might quibble with some segments here and there, but for the most part, the quality of the shows has been pretty high. However, because of all the backstage drama with AEW regarding CM Punk, The Elite, Andrade, and everything with Sammy Guevara, there just seems to be a negative pall overhanging the whole atmosphere surrounding AEW. Whereas on the other side, it's not just that WWE has been having good shows, but there seems to be a lot of optimism and some positive energy from fans toward WWE for the first time in a long time since Triple H took over. It's just a stark contrast, because if I'm looking at the quality, I don't think either show is necessarily outdoing each other. I think they're pretty much the same in terms of quality, but the overall feeling you get from the shows and whatnot leads me to believe, or has me as a viewer, thinking that there's more to look forward to with WWE, not just week in and week out, but as the months go by and into next year, which I don't think, as an AEW fan, you would have said that was coming in 2022 or 2023 moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I think you're right. I think it's a bit of a tone shift. And look, mm-hmm. I think Paul Levesque and WWE will have their road bumps at some point. Every company does. And it's just a matter of how you manage that. And we're seeing Tony Khan go through that right now. Whether effective, not effective, whatever your thoughts are on it, he's definitely going through it. And it's changed the tone of the show a bit. So yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out. But it's WWE has some momentum. Javier, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with the momentum. It's going to be in for its biggest test, because once we clear tomorrow, the next show is the Saudi show. And that's definitely going to sap some
yeah.
momentum from that. So once they start getting into the bigger builds. And then we'll see what happens after that, because now I think that's going to be their biggest albatross around their neck. And besides the fact that it's the Saudi, I mean, setting that aside, which, is a whole other kettle of fish, just the fact that it's a show that's not going to be, when you normally hold the show, it's going to be a different time frame, it's going to be a different, it just sets everything out of whack, and the fact that it needs to be built kind of like a WrestleMania. And we'll see if it is built like a WrestleMania or not. I do think we're going to end up getting a Riddle versus Cormier. So there's another spoiler on my primer.
That makes sense.
Because I mean that's the only way, because Riddle has to win. The only way that Riddle can lose is if Cormier is the one who costs him the match. That's not getting those matches here is going to be like that's going to be more of a downer. So we'll see. I mean, I hate to be the early downer on the whole thing, but you know,
we'll look at it this way. Turning Survivor Series into War Games right after Crown Jewel now looks like even more of a shrewd move in hindsight.
Yeah. Good point. Because this is last couple of years this has been like the most painful period. So.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
So yeah, I think that's pretty much what I had. So it was good talking to you guys.
Awesome.
Check out stay tuned for the primer. I'll see when I'm back with the New Japan Pride podcast, probably for what's the next tournament? World Tag League, I think is the next one, right?
That's World Tag League, good.
So be back for I'll likely be back for that. I don't know, it depends on the my schedule. So, all right, guys.
All right, Javier.
Thanks,
good stuff. Thanks a bunch, man. Good to talk to you. Have a good weekend. Excellent stuff there from Javier. Always good to chat with him. So Bruce, a couple more topics that I got for you here before we put a bow on this thing. We'll wrap up the color portion of the show there tonight. The New Day pinned the Usos, and and if it's any other team, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, you know, there you go. They're going to have, like, it's that classic WWE to, like, go, all right, well, champions got pinned, so the people who pinned them are the new, you know, number one contenders, right? But, man, it's the New Day. And, you know, we've been there and done that a lot with the Usos and the New Day. Did you get the sense watching that's where they're going?
No. Again? I'm glad that I didn't get that sense. What okay. I got is that they're trying to build this three-man dynamic between Sami Zayn and the Usos. I even wrote in my primer that this may lead to them pulling a Freebird and having Sami Zayn as a part of the team to defend the tag team championships and matches, like the New Day did during their reign. And I think that's mostly because, one, the impromptu nature of the third partner or the tag team partner for the New Day being Braun Strowman. Two, all the shenanigans that was going on between Jey Uso and Sami Zayn on the outside, which led to the faces just kind of like, are they really doing that? Okay, let's do this. Hurry up. Like, them doing that, I think, is meant to give the Usos and Zayn an out and not necessarily elevate the New Day and Braun Strowman as tag team championship material. Even though New Day were the ones that ended up getting the pin and Strowman hit the Strowman Express on the outside, I just think that they're trying more here to build that dynamic between the three of them than they are trying to build another New Day Usos rivalry, especially when, I mean, the New Day have been acting more heel and heel throughout the last several months. And even though the fans like Braun, everything the New Day was saying in the backstage segment were things that heels would say. And even though it was funny when Xavier Woods yelled out to Sami Zayn, "You're not the stepdad, you're just the dad who stepped up," talking about Jey Uso. And I thought that was a funny line, but I'm not sure if the face should be saying that, right? So,
right.
Especially in a mocking way. So I think I don't think WWE is ever going to introduce six-man championships or six-man titles or six-woman titles, but I think what they're doing here is trying to make sure that or even trying to get to the point where they have a Freebird rule. And maybe because they use the Freebird rule with Sami Zayn, that's when they lose their title. Maybe it's right before they eclipse the New Day's record. And so they still have that thing to strive for in the future.
I like it. I like that a lot. Good stuff. Okay, last thing. They had like a couple, I think it was two, but it may have just been one long one, a vignette hype promo video for Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
Extreme rules match. I was I was pretty impressed with that. I think the video like really made the feud look to be much better than it actually was. Which I suppose is the idea, right? Like you want to put together a video that sells the program. I thought that was a good piece of business tonight to do that and to not don't have an angle. Don't have them come face to face. Just tell the story and pick out the points that you really want them to want the audience to know and to have resonate. And I think that's what they did. They really emphasized the key pieces of the feud and kind of left the nonsensical pieces behind. So I give that a thumbs up. I thought it was a really smart way to give that program a little juice heading into tomorrow night. What do you think?
So the second one you're remembering was the little 15 to 30 second, a video they played when they came back from break, which they did for Bayley and Bianca Belair earlier in the night too. So there was a second one. It wasn't as detailed as this. It was just a quick one.
That's
this
right,
one.
Okay.
So I give it a thumbs up in one regard and a thumbs up in a different regard. And I'm just going to read straight from my report so that I'm not mincing any words. So I said, it didn't really do anything to make Morgan look any more face and just made Rousey look like a justified badass in her hostility toward Morgan. It was good in hyping the match, but if they wanted fans to get more behind Morgan, I think they failed. So that's why I'm saying thumbs up in one regard, but thumbs down in the other regard. Because when I was watching that, nothing they did, Morgan is ostensibly the face here as champion, and nothing they did made me think of her any more as the good gal, than Ronda Rousey, who I just saw as, I might not like you, but I don't see anything that you did that's in the wrong. And that, again, it depends on what their goals were for this video. Was it to hype the match and get people excited for the match? Was it to get fans more behind Morgan? Was it a combination of both? If it was the second or third, then I think that's where they failed. But in terms of hyping the match itself, I think they did a really good job here, as they usually do when it comes to these types of videos, like they did with the main event tonight with Gunther and Sheamus. But again, if it's about getting behind Liv, I don't think they succeeded there.
Yeah. No, you're right. They did. I don't know, man. Like, I don't even think that was the attempt, really. I think they kind of like washed their hands of it. It felt like, you know, it wasn't like I didn't get the sense, to your point, that they didn't seem like they were like trying to course correct and like quickly tell another story for her that wasn't really what happened. You know, like how sometimes, you know, WWE will produce, you know, a hype video and it, you know, it leaves out entire angles, you know, that didn't necessarily work or play well. They didn't do that here. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see like what goes down. Cause I think, you know, I don't know who you think is going to take the belt, but I kind of think Ronda Rousey needs to just take that thing at this point. But what have you thought of Liv Morgan's run so far?
Look, I was covering Raw when they first tried to bring her up against Becky Lynch. And there were moments, but throughout my entire time covering Raw and her run, I just kept saying, there's just nothing more there that draws me to her and brings things out of it for me. Bring things out of her for me. And I just don't know if she's actually improved that much. So they had a chance with the Money in the Bank and going from there. I think the story they had could have worked because she went through the ankle lock and she got the pin, even though the pin wasn't the greatest. You know, it was a possum pin. But then everything they've done since then has just made things worse to me for her. And I know the fans like her. This is not me trying to bring her down in any way just because I don't like her or anything. It's just, I don't think that she has reached the potential that not only the fans see in her, but that WWE hoped that she would reach. And that's unfortunate. Sometimes that happens with wrestlers, and you just move on. And she could have a perfectly fine and great career as a tag team wrestler, a mid-card women's wrestler, and I think that would be, you know, that'd be a good career. She had her chance, and she at least has that women's championship on her ledger that no one can take away from her. So for her, at least there's that success. But again, I just haven't been. It's made me like Ronda Rousey for some reason, and that shouldn't be how these things go.
Yes. Well said. All right. Well, we will wrap it up. We'll wrap it up.
Well, Zach, real quick. I have one thing left.
Go.
for you because you're the art guy. It's not for SmackDown, though. I want to talk the Royal Rumble real quick. And the reason I want to talk about this with you is because, again, you are your expertise is on the artistic side of wrestling.
Yes.
And so I think the what's the phrase I'm looking for? The obvious, not so obvious secret is that it seems like Cody Rhodes, when he comes back, is probably going to win the Royal Rumble, regardless of WWE saying he wasn't set to win the title or whatnot. It just seems like after Hell in a Cell and everything that he did up from WrestleMania on, that he has everything set to come back and win. Now, most people are saying, you know, he's got to come out at 30, yada, yada, yada. I don't think that's what they should do. All right. So I'm going to lay this out. It's going to take a little bit, but I think it, for you as the artistic guy, it'll work better. So this all is predicated on Seth Rollins going on a run from now until the Royal Rumble match. He needs to beat Riddle. He needs to win his feud and go into the Rumble as the favorite. Announce about 20 wrestlers, but don't announce any other entry spots. So just leave it random. Maybe you say number 30 is Omos, but I'd say even leave that random. But then when the match starts, out comes number one, and it's Seth Rollins. The favorite is in at number one, ready to go, confident. And then at number two is when Cody Rhodes enters. And you have those two. The HBK British Bulldog from 95, and as Seth thinks he's going to finally vanquish his foe, the one that he hasn't conquered, in Cody Rhodes, for the fourth time, Cody Rhodes bests him and wins the Royal Rumble match. What do you think about that scenario?
I think it's good. I think it's really effective, and I think for a couple reasons. Number one, you know, there's still like an unfinished angle between Seth Rollins and Cody. Yeah, I mean, yes, Cody got the wins, but storyline wise, it was Seth who kind of like definitively put him on the shelf, like from a story perspective. So you have that. The other thing is, it's like Cody Rhodes as a character has set up this story arc really in a beautiful way, in that he's just scratching and clawing to get this title. And for as fun as like the surprise of like a number 30 entrant would be, like I think you can, if you can do it right and you can build the match, the structure of the match right, man, you could really tell that story of Cody grinding it out from the number two position. And then by the end, it's like, man, he overcame it all to get this opportunity at WrestleMania. And that to me is, you know, it's a better story. You may have a better moment, like a better, like, bigger crowd pop and whatever. Like, just that moment that WWE would show over and over and over again, a la John Cena at the Garden from all those years ago. But I think if you want to, like, stick and do something that really lines up with Cody Rhodes' character, I think you've got something there for sure.
Well, I'm glad you agree. I think it just really aligns with the – especially the character that he displayed at Hell in a Cell. And what better way for him to do that than, you know, going 60 like Rey Mysterio or Shawn Michaels at number two and winning the match. And I think that more so than being 30 would also build more credence to him having a legitimate shot to defeat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah. No, it would. It for sure would. Well said. Very well said, man. Bruce, anything else in your, like, SmackDown notes tonight before we – get off the air here. We're going long.
The only thing is that there was only, in my count, only one throwaway segment, and that was the women's tag team match. Every other match or segment either had something built toward it or is building toward more things moving forward, whether it's Tomorrow Night, Crown Jewel, or, you know, like Solo Sikoa and Ricochet, a longer feud, including Madcap Moss eventually. So it was a good show in terms of the segments being, for the most part, having a purpose to them.
I agree. And I think that's going to serve SmackDown well in the long term, and Raw for that matter. Just you want stuff that you want stuff that matters, and that's going to keep people engaged segment to segment. And I'm with you. Like I don't think tonight was necessarily newsworthy, but it wasn't change the channel awful either.
Yes.
So
yes.
All right, Bruce, we'll wrap it up right there. Thanks to all of our callers tonight. It was fantastic. Bruce, thank you very much. Always a blast to talk wrestling with you, man. One more time with some plugs, and how can people follow you on social media?
Sure. On Twitter, you can find me at B_Z253. And then I'm part of PWT Talks NXT every Tuesday. So look for our reports and the podcast, which you can call into or email live every Tuesday or listen to on your podcast app afterwards when you can download the next day. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it. I'm PW Torch's Senator Zach Cater. I'm filling in for Wade, and you can go VIP. He'll be later on there with the Wade Keller Hotline running down tonight's SmackDown. And it's a busy wrestling weekend, so now is the time to go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP for just podcasts and coverage of all sorts of events, like the Bound for Glory event tonight. We've got a big GCW event tomorrow night with John Moxley and Nick Gage, obviously Extreme Rules as well, plus like the Battle of the Belts and Live Rampage. So that's busy wrestling weekend. We got you covered as VIP members, pwtorch.com/goVIP. We also have you covered at pwtorch.com. It's a stock full with great written reports like from Bruce and hit the Mrs. columns, my editorial columns on all the shows. Just a host of other great stuff from a great team of contributors. So make pwtorch.com part of your day. As wrestling fans, I think you'll be really happy that you did. And also, find us on YouTube. Find us on YouTube, guys. We do live preview shows for all the big shows of the week. So Raw, NXT, AEW Dynamite, SmackDown. Tyler Sage and I do a YouTube flagship show, The Fireside Chat, on Thursdays at 4 Eastern. We're getting really great feedback on that show and a lot of really great contributions from our audience that is with us live. So check that out. Subscribe to our channel. I think you'll be really happy that you did that as well. You can follow our brand on Twitter at PWTorch. You can follow me on Twitter at ZHadornTorch. Bruce, thank you once again, man. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
You too, my friend, and enjoy, hopefully, a Bears victory.
Hey, yes. Well, we need a miracle, but absolutely.
Hey, you got my Niners the first week, so you have that over me all season.
If only we could play in on a monsoon every single week. That would be good. That'd be good. Yes. We'll see. We'll see how they fare. But Bruce, thanks very much. Thanks to our callers. Appreciate it, and we'll catch you guys next time.